You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
Getting the pipes warmed up. Getting the pipes warmed up. Good evening, everybody. Hello. And I hope everybody's having a fantastic Thanksgiving Eve. I know that this is one of the most prolific drinking nights of the year in the United States. So I hope everybody's having a very safe, measured evening. And tomorrow's is just the best. You just get to hang out. It's Christmas without the financial obligation. That's it. The Cowboys always play. Cowboys play the Redskins. We could possibly go to 10-1. How about them Cowboys? Feels good. A couple funny things though I want to do real quick. I had this one. Koss left a review on the podcast. He's the last review I just got. He called my attention to it. I just noticed it today because it takes a day or two to post. And I love these reviews. I want to see people get really creative with the reviews. But listen to this. He saved my life. That's what it starts out with. Frank does a great job of delivering a comprehensive, unbiased. No, it's biased. It's biased, but I think my biases are pretty fair, right? That's bias in itself. Pragmatic review of current events. Frank is the smartest person in the room, regardless of the room he's in. Once you listen to Frank's acute points, you will then try to pawn those off as your own in hopes of impressing your family and friends. Lord knows I have. Although I haven't been able to fool anyone yet. Thank you for that, Koss. That's great. Couple things. New articles out on the lessons from the Native Americans on open borders. Check that out on Gaslight.tv. That's new today. From Stephanie Evil. Also yesterday, remember, Max Ancaparato put his thing, his latest piece out. If progressives can ignore federal laws, why can't I? Check that out. I'm telling you, these are great articles. And the kind of traffic we've had, the kind of readership we've had already, I really am very, very excited for what this is going, where this is going to go, because it's just a great team. And of course, also from yesterday, Gadget Doc, he put out an article on General Mike Flynn and Islamism. So the media demagogues are at it again. Islamism is a cancer. So check that out on Gaslight.tv. Going to start covering some of those on the show, to be honest. What's the other thing I wanted to do? Oh, since we're talking about federal law itself, and of course the election that's still looming all over us, but of course the popular vote thing is coming up again. Everybody, it keeps having these little pathetic resurgences in the news because the popular vote is now close to 2 million Californians. We don't care. We don't care. I mean, do you know how absurd it is? Well, obviously they don't, but they don't hear themselves saying that they believe three or four cities in the country should dictate everything else. Everything else for everybody else. That these urban city dwellers who think they got everything figured out and are just voting for the bigger option because they need to be fed too. Because a city that size has got to work and the money's got to come from somewhere. So of course these are the places where the unions thrive and where just all this shit happens and all these demagogues rise up. You know, it's because what is the life of city? What is the city life? It's a life of constant disrepair and rotting. I mean, always. I mean, there's so much that goes on. The sewer systems, it needs constant maintenance because of the amount of people, the amount of things you have going on, the amount of human activity in these city centers requires unbelievable amounts of government influence. And industrial influence, government on industrial scales, I should say. All the people that need assistance, all the food programs and the education and everything. I mean, come on, subsidized housing. These cities are like beehives for humans.
Beehives are highly efficient. So I wouldn't compare New York City like that to a beehive.
New York City is still, I mean, it's not like it was post World War II. As far as it being a thriving a capital for everything. Lots of the industry that we had in New York City post World War II was right after World War II is sadly gone elsewhere. You know. Johann Strauss. But what we were talking about, the popular vote, it's popping up again because she's 2 million. Even though, God, listen, here's the thing. There's a reason why Hillary Clinton backed off. There's a reason why Donald Trump doesn't give a shit about the popular, obviously, because he won straight out. But there's a reason why she's not contesting, and she wasn't going to contest. A, she knows it's futile. B, there was other things negotiated behind the scenes. We mentioned this on a past episode, but we just brought it up again prior to getting on air. Who knows what could have been? Matt even brought up the idea that all of that information that the NYPD had that they were threatening to go public with and all that stuff, maybe Trump has that now. Especially with all the friends he has in New York City and the police. You know, maybe he has pertinent information. Maybe there was a deal done. Maybe that's why everything's been backed off of. He doesn't want to hurt them. He doesn't want to hurt these people. It was an ugly campaign, what he said about the Clintons, that he didn't want to hurt them. So it's like everybody's like still like keeping this weird infatuation with the popular vote going on, as if she even really wants it. Like they're fighting for her. No, you just have a really, really bad case of just cognitive dissonance. And you cannot accept any other reality, and you're holding out hope, and you're trying to parade around about how the system sucks, even though if you win the Electoral College and you lose the popular vote next year, next time around, you're going to love it. It's the greatest thing. It's the reason why we have it. It keeps our democracy in balance. You're going to love it. All the things will fall into place. Because remember the Great Blue Wall that didn't come to help you. Because you just didn't expect that you might lose. You thought everything was in hand. Your media told you everything was in hand. All of your favorite characters in government told you there wasn't a chance in hell. Donald Trump. He's down in all the major polls everywhere. Every state. Don't even go out and vote. They just didn't get it. But if people think that they're doing Hillary they're being good little dogs, and they're fighting the good fight, fighting for Hillary. Hopefully Hillary will notice them. Hillary will notice them being good little dogs or something. I have no clue what it is at this point, because once again, they don't understand anything much more shallow than the talking points for the general election itself. So to try to get any of these people, or at least a majority of them, to try to conceptualize the bigger things that were going on behind the scenes and the deals that had to have been struck for this transition to have gone as smoothly as it has. We all expected to be locked up in litigation for a while, no matter, especially if Trump lost. You know that Trump was going to sue somebody. You know, he was then going to fail. To be honest, at this point, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? If you get into office, the whole point of the whole point here right now for Trump is, if as long as you get into office and nothing is going to be reversed, then who gives a shit on God knows how much voter fraud that was going on the day, election day, and leading up to the election? Because I hear that the early voting systems are actually very, very susceptible to being rigged as well. But God knows how much fraud really was going on, because all the evidence was there. We know it's happened. One election was stolen already. And everybody rolls their eyes. Oh, here they go with the fraud. It's like, wait a second. It happened. You can't get it through their heads. So you're not going to be able to say, listen, they made a deal. No, this still is not right. No, she doesn't want it. Okay? She's surrendering. She put up the white flag. If she didn't have all the shit looming over her head, the black flag would be up. No surrender. So, I mean, you have to understand, these people are leveraged. Everybody's always trying to out-leverage each other. And she was just the worst candidate ever. Stop with the popular vote shit. That just means that even if those votes are real, any portion of those votes are real, the 2 million surplus, I mean, not that those particular 200, those two particular 2 million votes weren't real people. I'm talking about the surplus. If any portion of that is real, all you have are just what? We know what those cities are like. It's almost like a bandwagon. You know the bandwagon argument? The logical fallacy, the bandwagon argument? How it's a logical fallacy because a lot of people got it wrong, have it wrong, doesn't mean that it's right. Or just a lot of people are agreeing with it doesn't mean it's right. You know, it's not proof of anything. Who cares if these big cities have convinced themselves that they can't live without government and whatever? We don't give a shit. We weren't designed to give a shit about what people think government should provide. We were designed to have government be not intrusive or invasive, or allow the mob to tell the slim minority, the slimmest, I mean the differential being slim, the 49%, the constant 51 versus the 49 that we always see in a democracy, where 51% tell the other people what they have to pay for. And it's only when you gut a country, both economically and then socially, and divide them up and make them hate each other, can you really start seeing the shift in that margin? The real shift in the margin of people who are going to want or need government to get big, or at least sustain its size. Because we've look at how badly we've been beat up. Everybody on Wall Street's doing well. Everybody always talks about the Dow's up. The Dow's up. This is down. That's up. I'm like, you know what? I understand it has some kind of importance there for some people. And maybe you can explain how it has a lot of importance on everything. But I've never felt it in my pocket when the stock market was good. For that matter, I haven't really felt it in my pocket when the stock market is bad either. Because I'm always hustling for myself. I've never left a job without having something else up. I have been fired before. Although that was like in high school. But still. Been working since... Actually, you guys remember Michelina's Pizza in Stamford, Connecticut? That was my first job.
Never heard of it.
Well, you wouldn't have. Anthony and Mike might have. 13. And I didn't stop from there. Because I worked there until I was 14. And then CVS hired me early. Fuck it. You know? You take care of your business and that's it. But people have been made sycophants. Like, government sycophants. Like, if everybody just handled their own business right now and just stopped thinking that their voices matter. Your voice is not supposed to matter on a national scale. I'm sorry. Sorry, it's supposed to matter on a local scale. Do you. Have your community do you. You've got a civil rights problem in your community? Do you. Fix it. But, you know, we don't have that. We have people in media that are trying to convince us that every problem that happens in a person's backyard is everybody's problem. And we need to get militarized now. We've got to get mobilized now. Everybody, vote! It's fucking ridiculous. Okay. So, that's it with the popular vote. I don't even know if we hit up any points there, but... I don't know. Border battle. More people are flooding over. Because they know it's the last couple of weeks before Donald Trump gets into office. U.S. sees a spike in apprehensions along the southern border. Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson... on a Wednesday, reported that there's been a spike in the number of people apprehended along the southern border, adding to the complexity of the immigration situation that Donald Trump will inherit. Inherit? Johnson said there's currently about 41,000 individuals in our immigration detention facilities, a big jump from the typical 31,000 to 34,000 figure. Recently, we have seen an increase in the number of those apprehended on our southern border. We have instructed our border security and immigration enforcement personnel to take steps to keep pace with this increase. And here's the problem with border states, whether it be California, and New Mexico, and Arizona, and Texas. When you say, well, you know, our state is our state, the borders are federal. And we don't care about... You know, this needs to... There's a reason why federal law needs to be stiff. Because it impacts everybody, whether they wanted it or not. And here's another thing. 9/11 Mastermind. This is from today. 9/11 Mastermind. Al-Qaeda... favors immigration to defeat USA.
It seems that Donald Trump has begun preparing to create tougher immigration laws.
All right, listen to this.
Recently, an architect announced that he has been helping Trump's transition team create plans for the construction of a U.S.-Mexico border. In an interview, Chris Kobach, Kansas Secretary of State, said that the president-elect's policy advisors have begun to create proposals which will allow for the reinstatement of an immigrant registry, which will list individuals from Muslim countries. On Friday... Kobach told Reuters that this will help Trump and the Department of Homeland Security hit the ground running.
Oh, boy. Well, the jailed architect of 9/11 revealed that Al-Qaeda's plan to kill the United States was not through military attacks, but immigration and outbreeding non-Muslims. We've been talking about that for a very long time. Very long time, when we were analyzing socialism. In fact, it was a Bill Whittle video that was really good. He talks about socialism. It's what the hell is it called? He describes socialism as a cryptid, you know, one of those, almost like, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, one of those creatures that are, there's lore about them being out there, but you never actually see it. Well, that's what he believes successful socialism is, a cryptid, because there's no evidence for it. But one of the things that he hits in that video about socialism is that what tends to happen in socialist countries is that people stop having kids. They stop building families. There's something happens to the family unit. And he looked at Sweden, and he mentioned that every year there are less Swedes on the planet. But if you look at the migrant crisis and what's happening in both hemispheres, both with Central and South America, and even though this is not really the problem in Central and South America, this is more so what's happening in Europe and what they're saying about, you know, Muslim refugees. Most of the people that are coming up from Central and South America are Christian. It's just a whole other problem. You know, they're still coming from socialist countries, and politically, they're used to something very, very destructive politically. So there's another threat there. But as far as Europe goes, we were looking at the birth rates of women in places like Yemen. You're talking about 4 kids to every 1 woman on an average. So whereas, you know, these Western countries are starting to become less and less every year as far as their natural-born population, they're being pretty much invaded, because it's not immigration. Immigration without assimilation is an invasion. They're being invaded by third-world refugees who are – it's in their very culture to have very, very large families. And they're going to outbreed. So we're talking about this, and here it is actually coming from the horse's mouth now. Because whether it was a planned thing, or whether it was just like, hey, listen, you're transplanting huge populations of a culture from this place to this place, they're not going to stop building their family units. It could just be a natural thing that happens once the unnatural transplant happens, of course. It all goes back to something that's completely unnatural and completely sponsored. So let's go back to this. It would outbreeding non-Muslims would use the legal system then to install Sharia law, according to a blockbuster new book. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed also predicted that intelligence officials using so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, such as waterboarding, he experienced, would eventually come under attack from weak-kneed U.S. politicians and the media. You see, these people do not care about the fact that they are going to be tortured if they are caught. A, they want death. B, if you're caught by them, your fate is going to be so horrible and barbaric. Okay, the only one having the question, the talks about morality here seem to be all of these pansies that are wearing safety pins. And I'm not even giving any two ways about it. I'm not even offering an opinion on it. I will gladly sit on that fence. But here's the reality. He's seeing it. Now, I know some people say, well, listen, you can force anybody to say anything if they're being tortured. So the real problem is, are you actually getting to people who are involved? I don't know. Has anybody seen the intelligence out there of who was involved with what? What is the rate of people being detained with, you know, being while, you know, but being innocent? I don't know what any of this is. Does anybody, when they take these stances against enhanced interrogation? I don't know. Max Incaparato says, treat people with the best respect for the first time you meet them. After that, treat them exactly how they treated you. What else did this guy say? The enhanced interrogation CIA contractor James Mitchell tells for the first time about his role interrogating al-Qaeda principals, many like KSM, still jailed at Guantanamo Bay. He details accounts of waterboarding and other interrogation sessions of the nation's most notorious enemies. He quotes another terrorist, Zubaydah, who said waterboarding was effective in the book. Here it goes. While we were waiting, Bruce and I talked with Abu Zubaydah, whatever the fuck, about waterboarding. By then, he had been cooperating for several months, and even though I hadn't seen him for a couple of weeks, I was confident he would help if he could. I thought he was the best source available to help us fully understand how Islamic terrorists were likely to respond to the waterboard and how we could avoid using it, if possible. We told him that if we didn't like doing it. We asked him to help us come up with some way to get the brothers to provide information we could use to stop the attacks, information that they are trying to protect, without using the waterboarding or other harsh interrogation techniques. No, no, Abu said adamantly, you must do this for all of the brothers. If you don't, and he talks, the brother has sinned, Allah will punish him. So, a lot of these guys, they want to be waterboarded, or they believe everybody should be. I'm not following, I said, thinking that I had misheard him. You think we should use harsh techniques more often? No, he said. Not more often, only enough. Allah does not expect more of a man than he is capable. You know what we don't have anymore? Faith. We don't have faith in things like this. No, what do we have faith in? Listen to that faith. You can't take that from them. Absolutely not. What the hell do we have faith in? Truth, justice in the American way? We used to think so. Okay, so let's get around to...
We love to sing, we love to dance. We admire beautiful women. We're human.
I gotta say some thank yous, okay? Quite frankly, on Patreon. Become a Patreon patriot. This thing just gets more and more fun. Somebody remind me. Gadget Doc, can you please remind me? I have to make a highlight. I made two highlights from last night's show. I thought they were pretty damn good. From the beginning with the news thing and also the Eyes Wide Shut thing. But also remind me, I have to make another highlight from the Star Wars follow-up from last night when we were talking about... the real way you can interpret who the Empire is and who the Rebels are. So quite frankly, on Patreon, go to patreon.com/quitefrankly and please become a 1776er or 1984 person. Okay? Especially before, I know it's getting later in the month now, I'm going to be writing the December letters soon, which are going to be Christmassy. And it is the first letter post-election. So it's going to be very, very... I don't know. I feel triumphant. A little bit more like, you know, like George Washington Valley Forge triumphant. We had a great victory together. Even though there's much more work to be done. So it's going to be a wintry Valley Forge triumphant type of letter this month. I feel it. So go and check that out. Tony became a supporter last night, dude.
Did he? Which club did he join?
Tony Federici joined the 1984 club.
1984.
So he's going to be getting a mixture of letters from you and I. That'll be fun. What are some of the things you would write to Tony?
Oh, I don't know. I saw him today.
I told him to give me a call later.
Yeah, I asked him what he was doing.
Well, maybe we can all hang out or something.
He said, I've been bowling a lot.
Well, maybe we can all get coffee.
Said,
you guys want to get some coffee?
What you been doing? I said, what are you doing tonight, bro? Bowling.
I'm bowling. Can't wait to see Tony again.
Phenomenal bowler. Absolutely.
And I told him that, too. I want to see him. How many times have you watched him bowl?
A handful of times. Dude's nasty, bro. He said the other day, what did he do, like 18 strikes in a row or something?
It's sick. Well, let me thank all my bosses. Michael Wells, Nikki Solis. I have to get new music. I had 230 songs on my other playlist. I got 44 here because I'm just trying to introduce new songs every time we go live and see which ones get me flagged and which ones don't. That's why we have a lot of classical music, because so many of them are in public domain. Although I think it's the copyright of the recording. I don't know. What algorithm is going to be able to identify the actual recording of a classical piece? I don't know. Here we go. Since it's the Patriots. All right, here we go. So, Matt Smith, Nikki Solis, Sean Collins, Andrew Great Dame, Christian Peppers. Sing it, boys and girls. Laura Veras and Perry and Stacy Little, I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I hope everybody here has a great Thanksgiving. Mike May, Max Ancaparato from Colorado, Rob Corrado, followed by L.S. Dan. I hope everybody has a very safe time. I hope if you guys do have any L.S. Dan that's in your possession, be very careful with it. I would never touch that stuff. I can't handle it. Rudy Escarcega, Jackie Milam, Eric Reitz, Whip me McShan. Matt DeFabio of the 1984 Club, the founder. There he is. And Brad Meyer, his cohort and second lieutenant. StephanieKBeauty.com, where Americans can go and be painted into a Polynesian. Or a Polynesian can go and be painted into, I don't know, Viking. She's not a face painter per se, but she does makeup, and it's amazing. She's on Instagram, Stephanie K. She spells it with the PH. Jenny Lee, good girl, bad girl, Jenny Lee with the red hair, and Kate McCallum. I have to check and see if I got a letter back from Kate. Brian O'Connor Jr., Mr. Gadget Doc in the chat room, Marianne Hart, Bren Antilles, and of course the newcomer and the oldcomer at the same time, Mr. Tony Federici. Thank you so much for your support, my friend. So, that's that. So I read Casa's review. We did a little bit on the popular vote. We just got all of our thank yous out of the way. We talked a little bit about immigration and 9/11 guy, the 9/11 guy. That's it. Let's take calls because I'm getting bored now. If I'm bored, you guys have got to be bored. Right, Matt?
No. Not necessarily, bro.
What do you think about this, though? I know that you're voting for Trump, and you're.
I voted.
I'm sorry.
Trump.
You're rooting for Trump.
I'm ready to die for Trump.
I think we're all rooting for Trump at this point because
everyone better. He is our fucking Lord Premier.
We would be rooting for Hillary as well.
No, I wouldn't.
If she was our president, you wouldn't want her to do an unexpectedly good job.
No, I would want her to fail. I'll be honest with you.
Are we reaching kind of oversold, overbought positions on both of those?
Uncertainty related.
Um, In either case, here you go. This is from Bloomberg. Soaring consumer confidence. Are Americans happy that it's Trump, or is America just happy it's over? So American, they're seeing that consumers are really, really confident about things. Of course, the stock market is going through the ceiling.
Set a record today. The highest it's ever been in its history. You stupid fucking idiots want to deny why it's happening. It happened the day after the fucking guy was elected. The fucking... I'm surprised you're only saying, oh, look what Obama did to the stock market. He didn't do shit. The reason why the stock market has been like that for the past 8 years is because of fucking him and fucking everyone else before him. Except for Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a fucking great man.
We got everything in there. We got everything into that one. Hey, you know, I think it's a little bit of a honeymoon period.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing going on now. We get to just simmer a little bit. I mean, consumer expectations to spike like that is always a good thing. It has to be optimism, especially because it's before the inauguration.
Taxes haven't even been cut yet on people, so just...
I'd like to see that happen.
You know,
I mean, I'd like to feel that happen, man.
I'm about to invest in fucking steel and coal.
You're going to invest in steel?
I'm going to try to fucking invest now. I'm going to have money coming in from that court case.
Well, depending on where you put it in, I mean, you should talk to Frank Civitella.
I got to trust myself. I got to trust my gut, bro.
What are you talking?
I know how the market will play out.
I look
at it, the fucking paper thingies.
Oh, my. Well, just tell me where to put my money.
You know.
Tell me where to put my money, Matt. Just tell me where to put it.
When you brought up the stock market, I was like looking to see, like, you know, what's going on there to see, like, what it's, you know. I don't really understand it too much, but I look at the stocks and see where to go right now.
To check the stock market.
Just fucking go to fucking New York stock market, and it fucking brings you there. It shows you shit like that, and you fucking...
Okay, I'm on the New York Stock Exchange website.
You find those paper thingies?
So what should I be looking for here?
Oh, I don't know. Look for whatever you want.
Okay.
What's up there? I don't...
It says list, trade, data, governance, services, insights, regulation.
Yeah, you can look at the name of some stocks and see how they've been doing. You know, how they've been doing. I think it says, like, what, the last, like, 10 days or however long or something? And
no.
Yeah, it does somewhere, bro. All right, I'm not, you know...
Okay, well, I'm just trying to find...
Watch. All right. You laugh. Watch when I invest in steel and coal, and I fucking make millions, and then start other companies.
Hey, listen, you know who's rooting for the coal, for coal to rally, big time? George Soros, amongst most people. So, you don't remember we covered that on the show? With all of the gutting, and remember we watched this on the 60 Minutes thing. This is a guy who has gone in and taken advantage of entire countries that are about to fall down because he knew, oh, well, you know what, this is going to happen anyway, so I might as well make billions of dollars on it. Like, he has absolutely no morals whatsoever. Okay, so he goes in and it just his rumors. He's like, it's all like all the rumors about J.P. Morgan around the time of the crash of 29, how the rumors and the run that started the run on the banks. Well, it's the same thing like that, where this guy carries that kind of J.P. Morgan 20th century kind of weight. And his just rumors about, you know, currency and all that stuff has thrown things out of whack. We can get people to call in and help fill that in for us a little bit more. But still, the Obama administration has pretty much made it impossible for anybody to make a dollar off of coal and to make energy, coal energy a thing. Almost gutted an entire industry. But once they did that, who swooped in and picked up all of the stock on coal? Well, not all of it, but a large portion of it. Hold on.
Wow. Say, well, when did we... I don't remember what the fuck I did two hours ago. So I don't remember when we talked about that. I forgot what I had for lunch today.
You had shit.
I could have, and I wouldn't know.
August 2016, 10 stocks, George Soros.
George Soros. He lives in Westchester County in Katona. Or Mount Kisco.
If there was ever a... This is from Market Watch from 2015. If there was ever a sector in the stock market where the trend, the relentless, unforgiving trend, was your friend, it has had to be in the coal sector. Coal has been falling with little respite since early 2011, and the Dow Jones U.S. Coal Sector Index has shed 94% of its value. 94%, my friends. But there comes a time in any bear market where the fundamentals get so bad that everyone just gives up, and that is when opportunity is created for brave investors. Even notorious environmentalist and billionaire investor George Soros looked at this group and in August bought a chunk of two coal companies.
He owns the companies.
I'm not a follower of fundamentals per se, but I do know that environmental regulations and the slowdown in the global economy, especially in China, combined to nearly kill the industry. Indeed, many companies that were on my sector watch list for years are now bankrupt. So he slips in. Hold on. Except for one sentiment angle. Make no mistake, buying coal stocks goes against logic, and technically, the arguments I can make for a bottom are mediocre at best. That is, except for the sentiment angle. We'll get into the...
Pharmaceuticals. It's good to invest in that too.
Who knows why he makes that decision? Okay.
George Soros. What do you mean to buy the two coal companies?
Well, yeah, to put money into that. Who knows? There could be a number of things. There's conspiracy theory things. There's whatever the hell it is. But who knows what it is? But definitely, there is the failsafe of if there ever is a turnaround or if things do go awry and something goes and people put all of their... Or a politician like Donald Trump rises up and switches things around and we start deregulating a little bit more, then at least there's that failsafe where you can pad your losses a little bit for what you reinvested into what was ultimately what you were going against, you know, what you're campaigning against. In your green movements and all that stuff. Who knows? What's going on, Frankie Castle? And Mike Delabate in the chat room says David Seaman is still going hard on the Pizzagate issue. I told him about it. I got in touch with him last night, and he said that after the 28th, he'll be back in action, and he'd like to join in. I said that the audience would really appreciate that call. That would be awesome if he starts us from the beginning and really paints all of this stuff. We started with the John Podesta and the cooking. David Seaman went all in on the occult stuff. Like, you would think that David Seaman is part of the staff at InfoWars. I'm actually surprised he's not working for them yet. Because he's going hard in the paint. Okay, he has gone after the Clintons. He started going after everybody just unabashedly after Huffington Post terminated him for questioning Hillary Clinton's health, being objective about Hillary Clinton's health. Ever since then, he's just been on a tear to the point where people have questioned his sanity at times. Seriously. You know? So... There's like little subplots and subcultures of news and journalism that it's starting to rise up a little bit. I don't know. I'd love to be able to get onto Joe Rogan's podcast. He's been on Joe Rogan podcast twice. God, I'd love to go out there and be... How the hell do I put my name into that hat? I should talk to David Seaman about that. How's that happen, dude? But I don't know. 7:44 now. Let's do something. Let's take a little quick break. What do I have here? Andrew. Oh, you know what? Let's take a quick break. Here is an Andrew Klavan show opening that I just loved. It, and I love all of his openings. I listen to the Andrew Klavan, Klavan podcast every night. When I get home, I listen to it at least the first 10 minutes. But the first 2 minutes are always the opening monologue. And he's such a great satirist and a writer that I just really enjoy it. And it's so funny to me that it makes a little bit more of a light, hopeful spin on all the things that we cover so day with throughout the day with such a vigor, you know, a negative kind of alarming undertone. That tone of alarm we kind of have. Check out the Andrew Klavan podcast. It's awesome. I like it at least. But here's Andrew Klavan. Here's episode 224 from a couple of days ago. So I thought this was funny.
It's that time of the month when we begin to feel bloated and crampy and find blood flowing out of our whatevers. That's right, it's time to visit our favorite website, Everyday Feminism, where feminism is transformed from a toxic philosophy that makes people miserable into a toxic philosophy that makes people miserable every single day. Today's post from Everyday Feminism is entitled How Donald Trump's Election Reveals the Danger of White Male Fragility. And no, I didn't just make that title up to make feminists sound like a bunch of clueless, self-serious shrews who can't see beyond their own narrow worldview because they enshroud everyone who disagrees with them in a fog of pseudo-psychology and moral demonization. That just comes free with the site. The post begins, quote, "As the last few weeks of the election dragged on, Donald Trump's campaign became yet another vestige of the white male heteropatriarchy," unquote. Now, let me just pause here. As much as I hate to mansplain the English language, it seems I'm going to have to mansplain until these feminists can girl understand. The word patriarchy means a form of social organization in which the father is the supreme authority. A patriarch is a father. To add the prefix hetero is to suggest that these patriarchs have sex with women. This is a redundancy, since that's almost certainly how they became patriarchs in the first place. More importantly, the word vestige means a mark, trace, or visible evidence of something that is no longer present. But since Donald Trump's campaign was successful, heteropatriarchy must still be in place, so it can't actually leave a vestige. I mean, it's almost as if this writer is so over-emotional that she's lost her ability to reason and has just gone off on some shrill, nagging, hysterical tirade. Oh, wait, this is Everyday Feminism, so of course that's what happened. Sorry.
So, I mean, that it just goes on, but destroys so many things. I love all – and actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to start favoriting all of the monologues he does and just going to start sprinkling them in. But here's something I did want to do too, because I wanted to take a little bit more time to just watch some stuff together, is a little bit more Norm Macdonald crushing Hillary and Bill Clinton. So let's watch that for a second.
His name for the first man to
let's do this.
Here we see the president and the first bitch. Hey, hey, slow down, you bitch. Let me catch up. Hillary Clinton invited Newt Gingrich and his mother to the White House. Apparently, she's hoping they'll get caught in the crossfire.
One
here
more.
We see President Clinton looking for something, anything, to hug besides his wife. In Whitewater News, federal regulators quizzed Hillary Clinton at the White House this week and gave her a perfect score on the lying section. She's a dirty liar.
She's a dirty liar. Oh, my gosh. So what's everybody going to be doing for Thanksgiving? Call in and let me know. Zen Live TV, that's the Skype. We could do that for a little bit. I feel like it's a Friday night. You know? I feel like it's a Friday night. It's got that Friday kind of vibe. I don't want to really do anything. The news is boring to me. Real boring.
That's tried to put my shoulder back in the socket, and now I'm even more excruciating pain.
Why don't you call Justine? You should call her right now.
I like pain.
You really did it this time. You really did it this time.
Dude, it's really fucking...
Oh, listen to this. Wait, what the hell is this? Oh, hold on. This is back in 2005. This was actually sent to me by Mike Delabate on Twitter. Listen to this shit, dude.
This case I worked.
This is retired head of the FBI. What's his name? I'm trying to find his name here.
The Howard Hunt.
Is this him?
Oh, no, he wasn't director. I don't think. No, E. Howard Hunt.
Here's a retired head of the FBI. This is from 2005. Tells all: Illuminati, Satanism, and pedophile rings.
Oh.
I was told to watch from this point on. Watch this for a couple of seconds.
Of a major consequence was the McMartin preschool case in Manhattan Beach, California. The children there claimed there were tunnels under the school. They were taken into the tunnels and through the tunnels up into the trap door of a bathroom in a triplex next door, placed in automobiles, and prostituted in the community. These are 2, 3, and 4-year-old children before they entered kindergarten. In addition, the children claimed that they were flown into the mountains where they were involved with adults in robes, black robes, chanting candles. They talked about the brown babies who were cut up, actually sacrificed. And in checking into this and researching this, of course, this was obviously a satanic ceremony.
Wait, brown babies as in black babies? Like or yeah. is that a term for something else?
I guess it's a term for someone of color.
McMartin family who owned the preschool, they were tried of Dre Buckey and his grandmother. The grandmother was acquitted, hung jury on Ray Buckey. The second trial, another hung jury. I had an opportunity in 1990 to gain control of the school. Now, the school had been given to Danny Davis, the defense attorney, and he had sold it, even though he made $15 million on the case, by the way. He had sold it to a contractor who was going to tear it down. When I learned this, I contacted the contractor. I said, I want to be given an opportunity to go on that school and look for the tunnels. The authorities had looked for them in 1987. They said they could find no tunnels. Along with some of the parents, we hired Dr. Gary Stickle, UCLA archaeologist. He hired his crew and brought them in. And in 34 days, Dr. Stickle said, there had been tunnels under that school. They were covered up, and they were covered in. An informant of mine told me that there was an abandoned satanic site in Crestline, California, up in the mountains. I went up into the mountains and obtained photographs, of the site. I have a lecture that I give where these pictures are available. It's called Gunderson Chronicles Number 2. It's a 4-hour lecture that I gave in Kansas City a number of years ago, which shows this abandoned site and also pictures from the McMartin Tunnel school dig.
Jeez. Femme Jr. says, this sounds like some bullshit satanic panic shit. A lot of innocent people went to jail during that time because of bogus abuse cases. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. And I can't wait to get David Seaman on the air too to start really going through all this other stuff. Because it was something that the NYPD was ready to come out against. And it's another thing that disappeared after the election results came in, which is very, very odd. So, I don't know. Delabate says these people were convicted. I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore of that.
It belongs in a museum.
It does belong in a museum. That is for sure. Here's a great thing that we can end on, if we do end. Here's a story. Now, I've seen this post a few times, and there's lots of sources for it, too. So you can check it out, or you can contact me, and I'll keep it as a bookmark for a little while. This is a story, or a little bit of a piece, on a man named Daryl Davis. He's a black musician, and he's credited with dismantling the entire KKK network in Maryland. He did this by befriending many members, even going so far as to serve as a pallbearer at a Klansman's funeral. Here's a picture of Daryl posing with hoods given to him by ex-KKK members. He says the KKK members have many misconceptions about black people, which stem mostly from intense brainwashing in the home. When the Klansmen get to know him, he says, it becomes impossible for them to hold on to their prejudices. He explains, this Klansman and I were riding around in my car, and the topic of crime came up. He made the remark that all black people had a gene that made us violent. I said, Gary, what are you talking about? He said, who's doing all the shootings? I said, let me tell you something. I'm as black as anyone you've ever seen, and I've never done a drive-by or a shooting. After a time, I said, you know, it's a fact that all white people have within them a gene that makes them into serial killers. Name three black serial killers. He couldn't do it, of course. I said, you have the gene. It's just latent. He said, well, that's stupid. I said, it's just as stupid as what you said to me. He was very quiet, and after that, I know it was sinking in. There's more articles here. Someone else said the thing that's interesting about him is this. If you read up on how he does it, the big thing is that he listens to them. He lets them say their stupid shit. He sometimes argues with them, but he also lets them talk about stuff and ask questions. And guess what? It works. The guy's got more than 20 sets of Klan robes in his closet that people have sent him when they decided to quit the Klan. He's also a great example of why I believe being polite to people you think are wrong is an effective strategy. And of course, it ends, the final comment is the Socratic method. Ask questions. It's hard to maintain a belief you cannot defend against simple, reasonable questions. It forces people to realize for themselves the lack of logic in the positions they hold. No one has ever been screamed or jeered out of believing in something. Guy is a madman. And you guys take that. Every time it passes my dash, I always take that lesson to heart again. What does that really mean for us on a global, on a wide scale? I just thought about all the terrible messages Matt has sent to congressmen and on Facebook.
One recently to some teacher who made a... She's a social studies teacher. I don't even know what fucking school it was. I just found her name. And she's teaching her elementary school kids that Trump won because of white supremacist, white racist, and shit like
that. And then there you show up in the inbox.
No, I'm like, yo, I'm like, yo, that's what you're teaching the kids? Like, all right, like, should I think all Muslims are terrorists? Or, like, I told her she was a disgrace to education, and that was it.
Well, that's actually not that bad.
No, it's not. If she answers me back, I'm not going to be so polite. No, I will. Until she stops being nice about it.
She's not going to be nice.
Well, then I'm not going to be nice towards her.
But listen, you didn't say anything like condemnable. I mean, condemnable. You own up when you say whatever the hell you say. But you didn't go. It's not like you said.
Will you show up at your house and drag you out?
Miss, I'd really like to have a conversation. I have to respectfully disagree with your stance on why Donald. No, it wasn't like that, though. So it's already a little bit unpleasant. She's going to either match your unpleasantries, or she's going to up the ante. So it's not going to be a good exchange.
For her. For her. I'll have her looking in her closet at night.
Oh, my God.
She'll think the boogeyman's in her home.
Don't.
It's just a joke.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. She's all the way in California.
Here is, listen, actually, no, we're going to keep going. The dismantling of the KKK was good. We still haven't done any Jeff Sessions stuff, which I really don't, you know. Jeff Sessions, I hope he gets in, and I hope they pull the nuclear option to make it so. Let me see here. Listen to this. It's from The Federalist. Why people lost their minds when a Brooklyn store played Sweet Home Alabama. Okay? Listen to this. Upscale progressives have gotten used to tuning out the voice of the Trump voter, but there's an America out there that they can no longer ignore. 3 days after the election, my wife and I were shopping at the Fairway Market in Red Hook, Brooklyn. For those unfamiliar with it, Fairway is a less corporate, more co-op version of Whole Foods, offering pretty produce and exotic cheeses that don't come cheap. The mood in the store was glum. As in most of Brooklyn, people stared ahead, moving slowly, still in shock from the political earthquake of Tuesday night. After getting our Brazilian Arabica ground for drip, I know, I should really use a French press, Libby and I walked toward the organic maple syrup. That's when it started. I suppose there had been music playing in the store, but I hadn't noticed until a familiar guitar lick pierced the air and a soft voice said, "Turn it up." Libby and I stopped and looked at each other. "Seriously?" my wife said, a very disappointed Clinton supporter. She started gripping her soft Tom Creuse a little, I don't know, I guess, is that a bag? I don't know. A little too hard. By the time Ronnie Van Zant's drawl started in with "Big wheels keep on turning," everyone in the store was standing in shock. Brows were furrowed. People mumbled to each other. The song seemed to get louder as one of those New York moments happened when everyone was thinking the exact same thing. A woman in her 50s wearing a Love Trump Hates button turned to her Brooklyn bearded husband and said loudly, "This is unbelievable." She found the nearest store clerk, a young woman in a green apron who was staring up at the ceiling, looking for the invisible speakers blaring this message from the other America. "This is so inappropriate," the woman said. "Can we turn this off?" The city of homes, cafes, and Clintons. Brooklyn was the epicenter. This is a new segment. Brooklyn was the epicenter of the Clinton campaign. Throughout the summer and fall in Brooklyn Heights, you can see young staffers near the campaign headquarters, expensive coffee in hand, eyes bright, ready to tackle the future. Cafes turned into phone banks where you could buy a croissant and make a few calls to flyover country. Buttons, banners, and bumper stickers were everywhere. As the election grew near, confidence was overflowing. A big victory was on the horizon for Lena Dunham and the new Brooklyn. The ground zero for upscale progressivism was ready for a party. white male supremacism was about to be crushed beneath a professional high heel. Fittingly, perhaps the only exception to Clinton mania in Brooklyn was in the southern part of the borough. In Diker Heights and Bensonhurst, big trucks could be seen with Hillary for Prison and Make America Great Again detailed on their back windows. This is not the Brooklyn of girls or the slap. This is the Brooklyn of the Blue Bloods, the home of cops and firemen, plumbers and construction workers immune to the appeal of a President Clinton. These are the people who listen to Skynyrd, and not ironically. Everything old is new again. This is the last section. I couldn't stop laughing as the fairway patrons tried to continue shopping with Sweet Home Alabama blasting in the background. And in retrospect, the moment was perfect encapsulation of a very old fight within America. The song itself was written in response to two songs by Neil Young, Southern Man and Alabama. It was 1974, and as the civil rights era faded into history, the South and Southern rock was reasserting pride in their culture and their way of life. Last year, Garden and Gunn talked to Gary Rosington, the last surviving member of Lynyrd Skynyrd, about the creation of the song, and he said, Neil Young had Southern Man, and it was kind of cutting the South down. And so Ronnie just said, we need to show people how the real Alabama is. We loved Neil Young and all the music he had given to the world. We love him today. It wasn't cutting him down. It was cutting the song he wrote about the South down. Ronnie painted a picture everyone liked, because no matter where you're from, Sweet Home Alabama or Sweet Home Florida or Sweet Home Arkansas, you can relate. For his part, Young would eventually agree that he had painted the South with too broad a brush. And in his 2012 autobiography, Waging a Heavy Peace, Young would write, my own song Alabama richly deserved the shot Lynyrd Skynyrd gave me with their record, great record. I don't like my words when I listen to it. They are accusatory and condescending, not fully thought out, and too easy to misconstrue. Man, can you imagine if everybody had that kind of integrity and that kind of just willingness to just say, all right, well, you know, that doesn't sound good. If accusatory and condescending sounds familiar, it should. Along with being called deplorable, Trump supporters, of which I was not one, have been treated in a way that is rare in American politics, and it's deeply troubling. The campaign that emerged from Brooklyn didn't just attack the politics of people who don't live in the big cities. It attacked their way of life and promised that it was dying. That's true. And think about it. It's just today. We opened the show, and now we're closing the show with the same thing, the popular vote. That's pretty much these Brooklyn community types saying, we are the only ones that matter. The cities, we're the only ones that matter. And here's the last segment. I guess it wasn't the last segment. Ignoring it doesn't make it go away. When the angry older woman with the anti-Trump button asked the clerk to turn off the song, the younger woman looked at her sympathetically and said, I don't know how. In that moment, something seemed to click. Of course, this woman thought, that Sweet Home Alabama could just be turned off. After all, we can block out things we disagree with. We can unfriend people on Facebook, block them on Twitter, decide not to let their negativity be a part of lives. For many progressives, this is the key to wellness. But turning off Skynyrd doesn't make it go away. Somewhere in the land where the stars still shine, it plays on, whether you hear it or not. The shock and the despair in Brooklyn over Hillary Clinton's unfathomable defeat comes in no small part because her denizens refuse to hear the rumblings of an America they chose to ignore. Just like a hillbilly band rocketing to the top of the national charts, Donald Trump has awakened the right sort to the fact that they do not control everything. For Trump and his supporters, the protests and the challenges to the Electoral College should be seen as another victory. Not only did they win, they are being heard, even in Brooklyn. David Marcus is a senior contributor to The Federalist and the artistic director of Blue Box World, a Brooklyn-based theater project. The Federalist, see, these are the great... Everybody, when I share things like stuff from like The Federalist and stuff like that, like, what's this? What's this? Good stuff? Is trustworthy? Like, I don't know the source. Like things from the Libertarian Republic and stuff like that, and like, oh, what's the source? The source. The source is real people. And use your gut. Use your gut and then research. Now, this was a little bit more of an opinion piece, but it was commentary on something very, very true. These people, this ideology blocks out everybody else's existence. Not only their opinion, their existence. And even the lamest assertion. Sorry. The lamest assertion. Ascertain. I was thinking about ascertain. Ascertain. What did I say? Assertion. What did I say? Assertion. And even the lamest assertion that anybody else's way of life is even somewhat valid. So there you go. 8:10, and that's the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I like it. I like it. If anybody has anything they want to say before we get off, the floor is yours. But I think that's the end for tonight. I feel like it has that Friday vibe anyhow. Hope everyone has a good one. Femme Jr., thank you for being with us, Marianne Hart. Nikki. Nikki says, show me on this doll where the song hurt you. That's funny. In my heart. Oh. Let's go get you a kale shake. Celery. Come on. Milkshake. Let's go get you a kale shake. Oh, by the way, Donald Trump just uploaded. I love this. He's sidestepping. Hold on, the transition team. The transition team. I watched it. The transition team that he has is. Has its own. Where the fuck is it? Transition 2017. They have their own YouTube. Okay, so when he did his first 100 days stuff, he put that out there 2 days ago. It's already had 5.2 million views. But the president just gave out a Thanksgiving message just 3 hours ago. I was alerted immediately. I made sure I got the alerts on YouTube for this. Saying
you're very blessed.
Now, I love how, you know, obviously he's making himself available to the press in some ways. He's airing out his dirty laundry with the press in other ways. But I love how he's keeping independent, too. And he's actually putting the press in the back seat a little bit, too, for things like this. And he's just taking things into his own hands. Check this out. This is from the Transition 2017 channel. It only has 50,000 subscribers. It was just started. It only has 3 videos.
We are very blessed to call this nation our home. And that's what America is. It is our home. It's where we raise our families, care for our loved ones, look out for our neighbors, and live out our dreams. It's my prayer that on this Thanksgiving, we begin to heal our divisions and move forward as one country, strengthened by shared purpose and very, very common resolve. In declaring this national holiday, President Lincoln called upon Americans to speak with one voice and one heart. That's just what we have to do. We've just finished a long and bruising political campaign. Emotions are raw and tensions just don't heal overnight. It doesn't go quickly, unfortunately. But we have before us the chance now to make history together, to bring real change to Washington, real safety to our cities, and real prosperity to our communities, including our inner cities. So important to me, and so important to our country. But to succeed, we must enlist the effort of our entire nation. This historic political campaign is now over, but now begins a great national campaign to rebuild our country and to restore the full promise of America for all of our people. I'm asking you to join me in this effort. It's time to restore the bonds of trust between citizens, because when America is unified, there is nothing beyond our reach, and I mean absolutely nothing. Let us give thanks for all that we have, and let us boldly face the exciting new frontiers that lie ahead. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
He's very well measured. I'm very interested to see the first State of the Union. We're forgetting all of the fun stuff that's coming, guys. He's going to have his first State of the Union. There's so many fun things happening. Just, all we have to do is just stay alive.
Yeah, it goes beyond having an opinion about him. It's just you have to recognize that this is history.
Yep.
Regardless to what you think. Like what, where you stand, on certain issues and what your feelings are about him, it's like, just embrace it all, take it in, because this is the kind of thing that if we do live long enough to, you know, have grandkids or whatever, like have like a younger generation that asks, they're gonna ask us the like, you know, what were you doing at this time, you know, that's because that's exactly the kind of time period we're living in. We're living in, this is historic. Everything that's happening right now, people will look back at this, if there's still a planet, and say, wow, that was some shit.
We got to do it. We got to do it. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to be a part of it. I think that we had pretty cool, we were completely involved. We were totally involved.
Yep, I voted for him.
We were not, all of us, everybody in the chat room, everything. We were here, we were discussing, we were debating, we were making impact or outreach as much as we can. Just, we did whatever we could. And even off air, we were just in the know. We tried to stay measured on everything. And, you know, it's, we definitely didn't drift through this. We savored and tasted all of it. And to be honest, it tasted good at the end. It really did taste... Well, it tasted better than... Oh, my God.
Tasted better than cum.
It was a surprise, dude. It was a surprise. But that's it for tonight. I'm going to come back on Friday. Remember, Friday, everybody... I was shitposting, Junior. Friday is going to be on Facebook. So find Quite Frankly the podcast on Facebook. We'll be streaming live at 7. I'm going to figure out a way to monitor the chat room. I know some of you guys don't have Facebook. It's okay. The show is going to be immediately uploaded to YouTube and the podcast afterwards. But have a good Thanksgiving, and maybe I'll upload some stuff straight to the YouTube just from my phone on Thanksgiving, a couple of short clips or something. Who knows? But what was the last thing I wanted to say? Yeah, Friday night is going to be very, very chill again. Last Friday was chill. I want to start doing different things, and I'm going to start getting guests back on the air. Got to do that, because you guys just don't want to call in. Just don't want to call in. I don't know. I don't do. It's like you just come on. But enjoy the turkey, everybody. Or the ham, whatever the hell it is. See you all soon. Be well.